Welcome to Eye on Careers. It's almost sacrilege to talk over this song, I think. But tonight, we have to break a few of the rules. Tonight, we're going to look at what it takes to rise to the top of your profession. By definition, the leader, the top performer, is abnormal. By definition, they break from the herd. They don't follow the norms. Why is it two people selling the same product, facing the same market, facing the same clients, one is successful and one isn't? Why is it? Is it the market? It's obviously inside you. Greatness is within you. Many people say it's genius or prodigy. An unbelievable talent, God-given talent. Well, I can tell you I've interviewed thousands of people, self-made millionaires, a few billionaires, and I have failed to find that genius. After turning over every rock, I most likely find a tenacious professional who simply refused to give up. Success defined as simply getting up one more time than you've been knocked down. But don't take my word for it. Tonight, we're going to interview some of the top professionals from Dubai, some of the biggest success stories in the region. Our first guest is George Riding, Chief Financial Officer for SAP Middle East North Africa. And our second guest from the sexy world of investment banking, private equity and private banking, Khaled Sifri, Chief Executive Officer of the Emirates Investment Bank. Khaled has over 30 years of banking experience, and he's going to be sharing his insights on the road to the top. But before we get to that, let's hear a little bit more about George Riding's background. This is an individual who's worked on several continents and currently is at the helm of one of the most successful IT companies in the region. And I don't think he's going to give us all of his financial data, but I can tell you it's quite a healthy net profit. I've been sworn to secrecy. I'm not allowed to say what it was, but I did squeeze it out of him before he came on air. But we're going to get into all that good stuff in just a minute and find out what it takes to be a top performing chief financial officer. How do you make the jump into the top job? This is Eye on Careers. Let's hear a little bit about George Riding.
George Riding is the Chief Financial Officer of SAP Middle East and North Africa. He holds this position since December 2010 and has been with SAP for 14 years. George's job is to oversee the expansion of SAP's presence across the region, which now includes 10 offices and several legal entities. In this role, George is responsible for all aspects of the financial function in addition to ensuring that compliance and legal obligations are fulfilled. Prior to coming to the MENA region, George spent 10 years with SAP in Europe, covering a variety of roles from leading a regional restructuring to launching a new cloud product. Before joining SAP, George worked with Ernst & Young in Warsaw, Poland, and on the public-private partnership initiatives for the London transport system. Despite all the above, his favorite job to date was as a jackaroo, a trainee on a farm in Australia in his year off before university. Just a shame, $50 per week does not pay the bills. George Riding is a chartered management accountant and holds a geography degree from King's College London and now lives in Dubai with his wife and two children. For him, the perfect weekend is full of outdoor activities.
George Riding, Chief Financial Officer of SAP. Welcome to Eye on Careers, George.
Thank you so much, Shane. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
I didn't know you were a jackaroo.
I was a jackaroo, yeah, absolutely. You know what a jackaroo is?
I have no idea what a jackaroo is, but it sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, you're basically the lowest of the low. You're a farmhand, and that's the name for it in Australia.
But, you know, I think that's the bedrock of success when actually from an executive search perspective, when we have candidates who've actually grown up on a farm, that scores huge brownie points with us. We know that those individuals have the tenacity to push forward, that hard work ethic that you can only learn as a jackaroo.
Absolutely. I learned a lot as a jackaroo, particularly on day one. The initiation that you go through is pretty brutal.
I don't know if we can say that on radio. The initiation, you got initiated?
Definitely, yeah, absolutely. So, you come in as the new guy from the UK, funny accent, and they spot you coming, right? So the first day is all of these tricks to get you to do ridiculous and dangerous things. Thankfully, I survived.
Is there a bit of friction there between the Australians and the British, or did you feel that coming in as a UK national into the Australian tough man environment?
Absolutely, yeah. I think probably less so now, but 20 plus years ago, there was a lot of friction. Yeah.
Worse, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was it? But that made a man out of you. You were jackarooed into manhood.
You could say so. Absolutely, yeah. Good way of putting it.
Yeah, well, that's the common phrase. I mean, it's So at that point of being a jackaroo, you didn't have a vision early on of becoming a chief financial officer.
I didn't have a vision actually of becoming a chief financial officer at that time. I was interested in business. I read about business. We were always looking at business ideas. We did some interesting things at school and university with that, but I never thought I'd be a CFO, actually. If you took me back then, I think it would probably be an unlikely outcome, but I feel quite comfortable in that position now.
I don't know how you feel comfortable, because it's one of the few jobs in the world where if you make an honest mistake sitting at your desk, you could end up in jail.
Yep, that's true.
That's basically, you know.
I got used to it. I think coming to the MENA region and...
What, going to jail?
Not yet. No. As we said before, I haven't visited.
No, I'm just joking.
Haven't done my time yet. But I've got used to it. I think you're right. The responsibility is there, but I welcome that now, I think.
But it's one of those jobs where what I call it's the opposite of an economist, because the economist gets all the limelight and none of the responsibility or accountability. And you have all the accountability and all the responsibility and, you know, limited limelight.
Yeah, this is true.
And is that a fair trade-off?
Is it a fair trade-off? Probably not. But I've set down this path, and had I thought about it earlier, I would have done something different. But no, you're right. I think there is less of the visibility. And a lot of the accountability, for sure.
But I think there's a growing trend now. I think there's more CFOs becoming CEOs every day, especially in the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as much over here. There's just less chartered accountants, I think, in this region.
Oh, we see it as well here. I think that trend is there. We're definitely seeing the CFO being much more central to the overall decision-making of the business. And I think a lot of the key differentiators, the competitive advantages sit within the CFO's office now. So he's having to change a bit and get out there and push the business as well and be much more involved, as opposed to kind of support from the back office.
This is George Riding, the Chief Financial Officer for SAP in the Middle East and North Africa. He's going to be sharing his secrets to the road of the top job in finance in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are looking at what it takes to be a chief financial officer. And with us to explore that journey is George Riding, the CFO for SAP Middle East North Africa. George, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
And you know, it's always interesting when you look at, there's only so many CFO positions out there, and there's an unbelievable amount of people gunning for them.
Yeah.
What is it that stops, you know, your peer group, so many of them get stuck in the controller role. What is it that allows someone to actually make that jump into the coveted CFO position?
That's a good question. Well, I think I'm not 100% sure how it works for everybody, but I'll tell you how I think it worked for me. In terms of, you know, my skills and experience, I think I made sure that I really had the basics nailed across the piece. So I really understood technically all of the accounting aspects of the business, which allowed me to really build on that a knowledge which could be, I guess, conveyed in a business context. So taking it to the next level, being recognized as somebody who could be a CFO, I think for me the real difference is the ability to say so what to a lot of the data that you get. So you were swamped with data in organizations, and you've got to be able to look at it and say, well, you know, what does this mean to me? If I present this to my management, what are they going to do with it? And building that bridge, so both in terms of picking the pieces that you really should be conveying and then getting out there and communicating that to your business, making sure that the business understands where it needs to take action, and the leaders, the board, respect you for what you're delivering, I think is an absolute key next step for a lot of those controllers out there.
And so, you know, the subtext of what you're talking about is really communication.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
rather than what the numbers are saying, what's the story they tell?
Yeah.
And is that where you think a lot of people drop the ball? I think maybe even whether they're not accountants, you know, any senior executive, as you move up, it's all about creating influence, creating impact, creating consensus.
Absolutely. I think a lot of, as I see, controllers who as you say, may struggle to make the next step, are a little bit fearful of taking this on. You've got to push yourself forward. So in the sense of, you don't have a seat at the board meeting every week if you're the controller, right? But you've got to make sure you get a slot every now and again, because you've got something important to say. And then you're invited back regularly. You become part of the decision-making process in the business. So it is communication. You've got to be selective, though, as well. You've got to prioritize, be selective about what you go to market with, if you like.
But now, are we getting a bit challenged for elbow room in the boardroom? Because you have the CFO was the clear second, you know, to the CEO back in the 60s. Yeah. And now you have the chief operating officer. So you saw when the Apple CEO stepped down, it was the chief operating officer that took the helm.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the chief information officer who's wedging his way in. And with the emergence of mobile banking, he may be a very interesting heir apparent as we move into the 21st century. And so on and so forth. There's clearly an explosion of CXO positions. And is the CFO under threat? Is he still the clear second to the CEO, or is his seat under fire?
I'd say, you know, it works both ways. The seat is definitely under fire. I think the CFO is always under fire. But also there's a tremendous amount of opportunity as well, you know, to be pushing, challenging on the CEO, the president, MD front, if you like. But the whole structure of boards and the way succession works, I think it works in a lot less traditional ways. You can have people coming now, as I see it, from left field with some very interesting and valuable skills that don't necessarily come from a traditional board environment. So I think it's more fluid. You're right. Whether it's better or worse, it's hard to tell.
But I think the CFO has a clear advantage because accounting is the language of business. I mean, you have three main paradigms of thought that's really driving our business language. One, you have economic theory or economic language. You have accounting, and then you have strategy.
Mm.
And you know, you can pick one of those three languages to talk to your board. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, it's going to drop off. You know, it's not like your chief information officer is going to start giving you the latest JavaScript and it's going to create consensus in mm-hmm. the boardroom.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I think the CFO still has an edge.
Definitely in terms of what you have access to, right? So your position gives you an advantage. You're absolutely right in terms of you're the master of the numbers. You're also the master of a lot of important processes within the business. But then it's what you do with that. Again, it's coming back to, you know, how you use that to your advantage and to the business's advantage.
And it's almost though, when you look at, you want really to have extreme growth. If you have a huge growth rate, it's generally the architect of that accelerated growth comes from either the CFO, or perhaps you have a CEO with an investment banking background. They understand how to make that gearing mix between the equity, mm-hmm. the debt. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you look at McDonald's itself, Ray Kroc,
mm-hmm.
He was suffering. He was almost going out of business.
Mm-hmm.
It was his CFO who said, this is not a hamburger play.
Yeah.
This is a real estate play.
Yeah.
And then he created the financial structure that mm-hmm. allowed McDonald's to become what it was. It was really the CFO. And so in a sense, the CFO, the real CFOs are actually visionaries.
Can be, for sure. And the example you put there about McDonald's is an absolute classic one in terms of turning the business on its head and coming out on the other side successful. And it really is a financial play, if you like. So I agree. I think you have a lot of things at your disposal as a CFO which can make an absolutely fundamental difference to the business.
And so in your mind, what, you know, some people say, you know, if you're not using debt, you're not trying to grow fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, you know, debt is the devil incarnate. We should stay away from it at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
What is your approach to the gearing question?
I think you need to look at very carefully at the business plans that you have, and make sure that you optimize, you know, how you fund them. You have to look at the scenarios. How fast do you think you're going to grow? What's the real upside? Where is your kind of your base growth rate? And make sure that you fund it accordingly. The debt equity mix there is really dependent on those profiles. So yeah, I definitely, you know, debt is of course not the big evil here. I mean, we've seen many very successful companies take on responsibly quite some loads of debt and do very well out of that.
Do you feel that if a company's not taking on debt, it's not growing fast enough?
No, not necessarily.
That if you're not using debt as part of your, you know, part of your war chest, that you're not optimized. That business is not optimized.
It depends on what industry you're in. You've got to look at, you know, there are some industries which require heavy capital investment, and you're never going to get off the ground without some debt, probably. So you won't even get started. There are some other businesses that, you know, if you start a real estate agent, for example, today, you know, I wouldn't advise that you take on a huge amount of debt. But it's, you know, you can probably still make a turnover by hiring a few people and you know, making them wait until the commissions come in to pay them. So it really depends on what sort of industry you're in.
So you're basically agnostic to the debt ratio.
I am.
You don't, yeah.
Yeah. Depending on the circumstances, need to be examined.
Doesn't the Western model facilitate the use of debt through the tax shelters that are provided? It's almost like everything that happens in the Western environment is pushing you towards taking on debt, and then versus in the pioneering markets or tax-free jurisdictions, it becomes less interesting to take the debt on.
I don't know. Honestly, I haven't looked into that aspect. I mean, what you read, for sure you would think that way. Can I comment on that? Am I an expert in that area? I would say no.
So, you know, as you move forward, where is really the line between the CFO and the CEO? I mean, if you are a visionary, like, for example, Martin Sorrell, who took the Saatchi & Saatchi share price from $25 in the early 1980s to $500 a share in the span of, you know, 6 or 7 years through 34-plus acquisitions, it was not the you know, a creative genius of Saatchi & Saatchi that drove that value. It was the chief financial officer, was the well, in UK they call it the finance director.
Yeah.
CFO is really an American term. But you know, he was the visionary behind the growth. When he leaves, the stock price drops 80%. He goes on to start WPP, the world's largest advertising. You know, we have a significant amount of data to suggest, in this case, the finance director was the visionary. How does that play out in the boardroom? Is, you know, at what point should the CFO really be pushing the vision, or should he be pulling back?
Well, in that case, it's, I don't know much of that story. Actually, I know he was there, and I don't know whether he was actually the visionary, but it can make a tremendous difference, even if you're not the visionary, just making sure the business works within its means or within the bounds, and that they're taking on the right business in the right areas, using the right level of resources against them to be successful. So you can have phenomenal, you know, vision. The Saatchi guys, I guess, were really gunning after business heavily. They had a different sort of bent, I imagine. They probably weren't that financially savvy. I don't know, it could be something very, very simple that Martin Sorrell was doing behind the scenes, which had an absolutely tremendous impact. Whether it was vision or not, I don't know.
This is George Riding, the Chief Financial Officer for SAP MENA region, and he's going to be sharing a few more of his insights on the road to the top and the top finance job. So stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we're looking at what it takes to make it as a CFO. And leading that conversation with us tonight is George Riding, the CFO for SAP Middle East North Africa. George, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So, you know, we were just looking at, for those of you just joining us, what it actually takes to make the jump from a controller into a chief financial officer. And then how does the dynamic really play out between the CEO and the CFO? You know, at what point is the CFO being a visionary? Is he not being a visionary? Is he following? Is he leading? Is he pushing the company forward? And that's always an interesting dynamic to watch. And so if you missed any of that, you can get it on our website, which is dubaieye1038.com/ioncareers. And you can go to the podcast section. We're also going to have a little bit of a competition this evening to see who has the best definition of what is leadership. What is leadership? So if you think you have a good idea of what leadership is, just SMS us your definition to 4001 or use our mobile app to send your answer in directly. Again, that's SMS to 4001 if you think you know, and you will win the big prize this evening. And so that's all open. But George, you know, you as the CFO are, you know, the kind of last defense, the bloodline of the business, or as they say in layman terms, no finance, no romance. So, you know, it's not like you can just take your CFO out. In fact, I think if a CFO actually quits on a publicly listed company, it can actually destroy share value overnight. It's tough. So you have to be resilient, and you have to be able to be tough enough to face any challenge. And the boards will look for that when they're hiring in this position. What has been the biggest challenge of your life? When has been that moment where, you know, the darkness was overwhelming and you really had to dig to get through that?
Well, I guess I probably wouldn't go back too far on that one, actually. We had my wife wasn't very well earlier on this year, and there was a few weeks there which was I would say really challenging, and a couple of moments where, you know, I wasn't sure which way we were going, and I did feel a little bit helpless, I must say. So, yes.
What do you mean? What happened?
Well, she was very unwell, and around Christmas time last year, she had a terrible headache, and we thought it was just a migraine. A few days later, unfortunately, we found her in a coma in bed.
You found her in a coma.
That's right. Yes,
that must have been petrifying.
Of course, absolutely. But you move into quite quickly into, you know, what can I do to help the situation improve? Anyway, it turns out that she'd had a hemorrhage in her head. Fortunately, everything has worked out, and I would like to say that she's pretty much back to where she was, which is great. But it was for a few days there, very, very challenging.
Very challenging. So mm-hmm. you come home, your wife's unconscious mm-hmm. in the bed, mm-hmm. petrified, time stops, mm-hmm. and then you have to call, I guess, an ambulance. Is that?
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's a week before she comes conscious again, or?
Well, it was a few days. She bounced back, but then the scariest point was that she slumped again. And I'm sure many of my colleagues will remember me calling them quite frantically around that time, you know, in a rather sort of helpless state, thinking that, asking all the questions as to what it was. But yes, she took a while to come back. Eventually did so.
So she came out of the coma and then went back.
Back basically, yeah, into a very sort of soporific, if you like, state. We weren't really sure what it was. Hunting, you know, you can imagine the amount of Googling the whole family is doing globally to find what it is. Nobody really could tell us, why it had that impact. A very challenging time.
And as an expat as well, you don't realize how isolated you are, especially when something like this happens. You don't have your immediate family with you. You know, there's a certain amount of isolation that you need to have, that added level of resilience to march forward in the face of adversity.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. No, it's when you're going through something like that, I think there is a natural protection the human brain has for you. You know, it puts you on a high state of alert, and you are able to get through things, do unbelievable number of hours, and stay up all night for several days and whatever. Yes, I think you are naturally protected, but there is a vulnerability because you don't have that support mechanism around you. But fortunately, we're very lucky, and a lot of people flew in, so we have mums and dads and all sorts coming in for a long period of time, which was great.
And now she's back on her feet and
absolutely,
fine.
Yeah. She's doing well, yeah, thankfully.
Well, that's great. So all's well that ends well, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah.
We have some of our audience here that is participating in the competition. If you know what, if you have an idea of what your definition of leadership is, you can SMS us at 4001. And Mazen Al-Rafai says, inspiration to drive to the best outcome of each leaded. That's Mazen's definition. Mm-hmm. But driving peak performance, I guess, is really what it's about. You know, can you deliver that alpha? Can you trade above the market? Mm-hmm. Can you beat the market? Mm-hmm. And what's your toolkit? I know when you look at driving peak performance in your organization, what are some of the kind of levers that you can use as a senior executive?
I think for me, a lot of it is about making sure everybody really understands the cause and works behind that. We all have, you know, the back office behind the CFO. CFO runs is seen traditionally to be a gatekeeper type of role, and there's of course a lot of truth in that, but you've got to, you know, turn that to your advantage and engage with the business to support them. That's where the money's coming from. You don't exist unless the business is doing well, growing, and customers are successful. And so whilst you have that gatekeeper role, you need to make sure from a back office perspective that the mentality is one that is fixed ultimately on the end customer. And that means ensuring that people get out there, they see what's happening on the customer side, and they engage both with their internal customers and the external customers to a level which ensures that there is this mutual understanding. And whilst we're going to go through some difficult times and that we will have to say, you know, put some brakes on and control the business, we still march forward together.
Right. So when you actually look at it, it's basically you're communicating a vision, and there's this various steps that first the message has to be communicated clearly. Yep. They have to accept the information you're giving mm-hmm. them as being authentic. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, they can then start to internalize it. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the real magic comes when they take ownership. Mm-hmm. Of the idea. Mm-hmm. And in my humble opinion, that's kind of what separates the great, like if you look at like a great CEO like Carlos Ghosn,
yep.
who turned around Nissan, he creates that ownership mm-hmm. transition, or mm-hmm. Sergio Marchionne, who turned around Chrysler, you know, he mm-hmm. can create that shift. Where do you see the magic in creating, taking a vision from fantasy into reality? Where are the real stone walls and how do you get over them?
That's a very good. I think the biggest thing, and where I see a lot of others going wrong, is potentially there's over management of individuals and the tasks that they do. So I think there's an under the energy of an individual and their motivation is generally undervalued. And what you see is that somebody, you know, may make a lot of mistakes, yeah, but at least they've had the energy to get up and get out there and make those mistakes in the first place. They've tried 100 things, they made 10 mistakes. The guy who tried 10 things may make one mistake. But what I would like to think is that you can get tremendous results by allowing people to giving them the room and empowerment to stretch beyond their current roles, supporting them as they do that, so backing them up, especially when things go wrong. And leading from the front as well. So in other words, showing them that this is the way forward. I'm prepared to get in there and do that. I'm expecting you to do that as well. And by the way, when you do it, I'm going to back you up, and I don't expect it to be a flawless exercise. So I think that's, in a nutshell, how I see it.
This is George Riding, the Chief Financial Officer for SAP Middle East North Africa, giving you his insights in one of the top jobs, one of the biggest companies out here, one of the most successful IT companies, and his insights into leadership. We're going to be talking more about what he looks for when he's hiring top performers and what he thinks are the key traits of a successful executive. So stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We're here with George Riding, the Chief Financial Officer of SAP Middle East North Africa. And we are looking at what it takes to do the top finance job. George, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
And so we've talked basically what, you know, how you take the jump from a controller into the CFO position. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about the dynamics of creating a vision, driving a vision, taking a vision from fantasy into reality. Mm-hmm. What kind of a toolkit is at your disposal to make mm-hmm. that happen? Mm-hmm. I think we also looked at various tax strategies and debt, equity, gearing, mm-hmm. how we should think about those, what kind of approaches we should use. So if anyone missed any of that, you can get it on dubaieye1038.com/eyeoncareers and check out our podcasts. And we're also having a competition for who has the best leadership definition. You can SMS us at 4001. That's 4001. Or use your mobile app. And here's a few from Dr. Jamil has written in to us. And he says, imagine a really tall waterfall and a lot of people watching it. And there's a person jumping down the waterfall. A leader is the one who dares to take the dive, strategies and plans his moves, overcomes his fears, and leaves no doubt in his teams. Dr. Jamil. Thank you so much for sending in your message. We have so many more, but please send us in your definition of what a leader is. What is leadership to you? 4001. So, George, you know, what do you look for? I mean, you're now in you have, 600 people in SAP Middle East. Mm-hmm. Yep. What do you look for when you're hiring a top performer?
Mm. Well, I guess you make the presumption that you're ticking all the boxes in terms of experience, and of course there are a good amount of experienced people here in the region. But I think what does really cut it as a true leader, I think, which is what you're looking for, is someone who has those communication skills, who is both determined, has a very clear view as to what they would like to do, has evidence that they've achieved great things in the past, and can articulate those things very well. And you can envisage that they will be able to do that, particularly when they're going out into the market and talking to our customers as well. So I think that aspect of it is really fundamental. And without that, it's very hard to execute upon anything properly.
So really a focus on communication.
Yeah, the ability. Well, having that strategy. A lot of people, of course, you need the bedrock. Yeah, it's the experience, the I guess intelligence, and understanding what you want to do. But so many people have that. But the thing that really makes a difference is being able to articulate, and as you say, get people on board with you in order to be able to execute on that vision.
They've done a study, and they actually found out that most managers, in 80% of the cases, make their decision within the first 15 seconds of meeting a candidate for a job. Mm. And so when you say communication, we're not just talking about what's coming out of your mouth. Mm. We're talking about, are your shoes shined? What, should you be wearing a suit? Should you not be wearing a suit?
Yep.
The Silicon Valley boys, they don't wear suits.
Yep.
The Wall Street guys, they've got the pinstripes on. And then you have like the architects with the classic jeans and blazer thing, like I'm not truly an executive, but I kind of am in between. And so you really have to look at what's your branding, what's the message that's coming out before you even open your mouth. And I think that's where people drop the ball. They don't think about themselves as a brand. Like, you are a brand.
Absolutely. It's very important to give that first impression. I think making the decision, it's true that most people do make that decision quite early on in an interview process, let's say. I think that's probably wrong. I think you need to get behind that a little bit. Particularly when it comes to the facts, you're talking about the bedrock, build a picture of what somebody has done. And there are, of course, different ways of going about things. And communication takes so many different forms. Effective communicators, they can actually be quiet, shy, retiring types on the face of it. But they're incredibly effective when it comes to bringing people along on a particular journey. Others, the more, I guess, gregarious types, the ones that we probably see as more stereotypical from a communication standpoint, are probably more visible. They can be equally as effective as well.
So what's your advice to anyone out there who wants to move into a C-suite position or is gunning for the top job?
I would say, be very, look at yourself in the mirror and assess your skills, whether you're ready for it. Maybe ask people for their opinion. Don't be shy of that. Talk to people who are there. What sort of experience did they get before they got there? What made them successful? What made them, in fact, feel exposed when they got into a C-suite job? Because some people, when they get to a C-suite role, don't feel ready for it, and they kind of a little bit fester in the role. They kind of linger. They haven't got the sort of momentum in their career to get then out onto the next role. So I would say look at what you've got. Look at the breadth of skill set. Don't try and get there so early for the sake of it being early. Look at the diversity in your career. Look at when you get to the C-suite, what is your next role after that? What do you want to do after that? And make sure you've sown the seeds for that before you've got there, because it's very difficult to do that whilst you're in there. So, yeah, it takes a bit of planning. Don't get there too early necessarily. And seek the opinions of others.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things you're mentioning there that I'm picking up is, you know, work as hard on yourself as you do on your job. And that's kind of, I think, what I got out of what you're saying is that you're focused on where you're going. Yeah. You need to be developing the skill set for the next role while you're in the current one.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll give you an example from my side. I had the opportunity to move into a CFO role a lot earlier, but I declined to do so because I knew that I lacked in some areas. So, for example, I didn't have enough true customer-facing experience. And I didn't want to get to a CFO role and find that I had to kind of work it out from there because you should already have it when you get there. So I took a sidestep. I was offered something much more senior. I took a sidestep, said, no, I'm going to do this for a while, as painful as it was. But it taught me a brilliant lesson, and it got me out there, put me in some very difficult situations with customers and other external parties, but really prepared me for supporting the business when I got into my role.
Well, this is George Riding. I mean, we seem to be coming up on the end of our hour, so I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to come out and give us your insights on how to lead in the top financial job in the region.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a wonderful experience.